Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Are mail order medicines ruined by hot weather? Question. A few years ago, I measured summer temperatures in our mailbox with an electronic thermometer. I was concerned my drugs might be damaged by the high temperatures here in Tempe, Arizona. I'm attaching an Excel file of what I found. Average daily mailbox temperature between August and October was 121 degrees Fahrenheit. Since that project, I stopped having my drugs sent by mail and now use an in-store pharmacy. The answer? Guidelines for medications generally call for storage at room temperature 68 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. During shipping, temporary fluctuations are allowed between 59 and 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Some medications could deteriorate rapidly under such conditions. Mail order pharmacies and the FDA need to address this weakness in our drug delivery system. Question. I went on metformin when my HbA1c went up to 6.2. After 3 months, it dropped to 5.9. I was nauseated and had stomach cramps at first. A few days later, I started having diarrhea and then heartburn. I want to get off this medication. Is there a way to do that? Answer. HbA1c is a way of measuring average blood sugar levels over a couple of months. Your levels represented pre-diabetes. Metformin is the most commonly prescribed drug for type 2 diabetes. Some people cannot tolerate the side effects. Common reactions include heartburn, gas, diarrhea, nausea, and stomach ache. Kidney function should be monitored, as metformin can be dangerous for people with compromised kidneys. You can learn about non-drug approaches to keeping blood sugar under control in our Guide to Diabetes Management. You should discuss your plans with your doctor. Question. I have IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, controlled with 2 to 4 loperamide pills per day. My nearest pharmacy is a 2-hour round trip. Limiting purchases of Imodium will mean spending the rest of my life commuting to the drugstore. How can I let the FDA know the proposed restrictions are ill-advised? Answer. The FDA has asked manufacturers to limit the amount of loperamide or Imodium sold in packages to 8 pills, enough for about 2 days of diarrhea. Let the agency know what you think by emailing Commissioner Scott Gottlieb at commissioner@fda.hhs.gov. Try celery seed extract for gout and joint pain. The question, I've had knee pain for the past 10 years or so. Taking turmeric helped quite a bit. Also have gout. When I read that celery seed extract could control my uric acid level and help my gout, I started taking it too. The celery seed extract has really helped my gout, but to my surprise, my knee pain subsided almost completely. I'm walking several miles a day now. An orthopedic surgeon had said that my knee was too far gone for any arthroscopic surgery with nothing left to repair. He thought the only resolution was a knee replacement. Answer. Celery, or Apium gravulans, is a vegetable that dates back many centuries. The seeds have long been prized for their ability to lower inflammation. Cited in Progress in Drug Research online, July 31, 2015. Elevated levels of uric acid are responsible for gout. Celery contains an ingredient that inhibits the enzyme xanthine oxidase, which produces uric acid in the body, cited in Food Chemistry, December 15, 2013. While we could find no clinical trials to support this natural approach, the mechanism is plausible. We've heard that celery seed extract can aid in gout control. Question. You have sometimes answered questions about foot odor, but I've never seen the remedy that worked for us. Years ago, my husband had this problem. It was hard to be in the same room with him after he removed his shoes. A friend had grown up in Arkansas with lots of home remedies. She told us to put 2 tablespoons of 20 Mule Team Borax in each shoe overnight. It worked like magic. Answer: Borax has long been used as a laundry additive, water softener, and deodorizer. This mineral is toxic to pets, so shoes with this powder should be kept away from cats and dogs. Remove the borax carefully before wearing the shoes again. It should not be inhaled. Another reader suggests spraying the interior of smelly shoes with vodka and allowing them to dry overnight. From the Costco Connection, Life in the Fast Lane. Charlie Kimball won't let diabetes get him off track. You can't slow Charlie Kimball down. In his early 20s, he became the first licensed Indy car driver with type 1 diabetes. When he's not on the track, Kimball often talks with children who also have type 1 diabetes, serving as a spokesperson for not letting the disease get in the way of following one's dreams. When the Costco Connection spoke with him via phone from the middle of a racetrack in Fort Worth, Texas, he talked about his diagnosis, his career, and how he balances the two. Did you always want to be a race car driver? He answers, I did. My dad's an engineer and designs race cars, so I always watched races on TV as a kid. I started racing go-karts at the age of 9 as a way for the two of us to spend time together on the weekends. Well, what happened after you were accepted at Stanford? I asked Stanford for a 2-year deferral, and they gave me 2 years off. I moved to Europe to race cars and pursue my dream of being a professional. Then in 2007, I hit a bit of a speed bump. I went to my doctor's office with a skin rash on my arm, and he asked if there was anything else going on in my health. Being 22 and 10 feet tall and bulletproof, I said no. I did mention that I was drinking 8, 10, 12 bottles of water at night, and when he had me jump on the scale, in just 5 days I'd lost 25 pounds. He said, I want to do some more tests, but I think you have diabetes. How long did it take you to realize that you didn't have to give up your career? It started in the endocrinologist's office the day I was diagnosed. I asked him if I'd ever get back in a race car. He looked me square in the eye and said, I don't see any reason why not. There are incredible people doing amazing things with diabetes all over the world. You may have to change how you go about it, but it shouldn't get in the way of living your dream. Being the son of an engineer and being very mechanically and linear minded myself, I applied the same methodical routine that I applied to my racing to my diabetes management. That's when I started with the continuous glucose monitor on my body. It transmits to a display that plugs into the car's data system. So on my steering wheel, I have my speed, lap time, oil pressure, blood sugar, water temperature, my car and body data right there together. My engineer and I work together and make sure the car is as competitive as possible. I spend the same effort working on my body to make sure that I'm as competitive as possible. What other adaptations were made to your car? It's not uncommon to lose 5 or 10 pounds through sweat. At the Indy 500, it would be a hot Sunday, and you're wearing a 3-layer fireproof suit for 3.5 hours while holding on to 750 horses without power steering or power brakes. So most drivers have a drink bottle for hydration. I actually have 2 drink bottles, one of water so I can stay hydrated, and the second one is filled with orange juice with extra sugar in it. These 2 bottles come together at a valve that made my dad design, and we got 3D printed. It mounts right on my seat belt, and the tube runs right into my helmet. Is there anything you wish people to know about managing diabetes while accomplishing goals? If you'll pardon the pun here, overcoming the challenge of diabetes and still being able to do what I love makes it that much sweeter. Racing gives me motivation to manage my diabetes, and having diabetes gives me the motivation to be successful on the track. Also from the Costco Connection, all fired up, identifying and treating rosacea, I guess is how you pronounce it, R-O-S-A-C-E-A. You could have tiny red bumps and lumps, or sometimes broken blood vessels on your face and nose, but nowhere else on your body. Perhaps your face always looks red or flushes easily. These can be symptoms of a little understood chronic inflammatory disease called rosacea. At least 16 million Americans experience some or all of these symptoms, according to Rosacea Society, which is rosacea.org. And currently there is no cure. Rosacea usually appears in one's 30s and lasts a lifetime. Although many fair-skinned people with strong Northern European heritage develop it, darker-skinned individuals and African Americans can also develop rosacea. Dr. Dindy Engelman, a dermatologist and surgeon with Medical Dermatology and Cosmetic Surgery Centers in New York City, says rosacea is more frequently diagnosed in women but tends to be more severe in men. Rosacea has been around for a long time. The condition can be traced back to at least the 14th century. In those days, that condition was usually blamed on drinking alcohol in large quantities. A very strange disease. Despite rosacea being around for a long time, researchers still do not know what causes it. There may be a genetic component, says Dr. Adam Friedman, a dermatology professor at the George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C. He notes that many other factors might be responsible for rosacea, vascular disorders, microscopic Dermodex, Fellicarium, face mites, the Helicobacter pylori bacterium, but often these are found on the skin of some patients, but not others. Basically, it can be one of these, all of these, or none of these. Researchers also believe there may be a potential link to autoimmune diseases, as many individuals with rosacea have other autoimmune conditions such as Crohn's or celiac disease. Many forms. Friedman says rosacea comes in several types with different symptoms. Blush and flush. Individuals with the ET or erythromatolangiectatic forms of rosacea can have a persistent ruddy complexion. There may be small dilated blood vessels on the face. Numerous triggers, including stress, alcohol, and sun exposure, caffeine, and physically hot foods, have been blamed for this. Acne-like or papulopustular. This form of rosacea can look like acne, but it isn't acne and can be more resistant to standard treatments. Rhinophimatitis, or lumpy bumpy. In this form of rosacea, the texture and architecture of the skin becomes very thick and lumpy, especially on the nose. Ocular. Patients with rosacea of the eyes often complain of a sand in the eye feeling, but the symptoms can be quite diverse, including redness, burning, and itching. More often than not, Friedman says, individuals have an overlap among the different forms. Because there are many forms, rosacea easily can be confused for anything from conjunctivitis to lupus. That's why individuals who notice redness or pimples on their face should consult with a dermatologist for an accurate diagnosis and treatment plan. There is no way to prevent not rosacea, Engelman says. Rosacea has triggers such as alcohol, caffeine, sun, and stress. And because these vary from person to person, it is wise to recognize early on what triggers make your rosacea worse. Helpful pharmaceuticals. While there is no vaccine for rosacea, there are some older prescription drugs, including low-dose topical antibiotics and antimicrobials, that are helpful. In addition, newer prescription medications are more personalized to the condition in that they target various biological issues that ultimately result in rosacea, Friedman says. He adds that rosacea is not something to dismiss or ignore. Chronic inflammation in the skin can lead to inflammation elsewhere in the body. Cosmetic treatments. Many dermatologists specializing in treating people with rosacea use a pulsed dye laser to treat, let's see how you pronounce this, telangiectasia, visible blood vessels, and facial redness. According to Dr. Dindy Engelman, This laser is absorbed by red blood cells and destroys the lining of inflamed and visible blood vessels. At least 3 treatments are required at 6-week intervals, depending on the severity of redness. She says only 2 to 3 weeks, over 2 to 3 weeks, the visible blood vessels will disappear. Vascular lasers can also help to stunt the advancement of rhinophyma, or nose swelling, she adds. Laser treatment for rhinophyma is a one-time procedure that may cost between $1,500 and $3,000. Engelman stresses that it is important to choose a board-certified specialist who is well-versed in laser medicine. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, News and Our Views. Just a cigarette or two is still bad for heart health. It seems logical that smoking only a cigarette or two each day would be a lot less harmful to your health than smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. However, a study published in Circulation found smoking 3 or fewer cigarettes daily increases your risk of heart attack and cardiovascular problems almost as much as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Most of the risk of cardiovascular disease comes from the first cigarette of the day. Another study published in JAMA Internal Medicine compared older adults who never smoked with those who have consistently smoked fewer than one cigarette a day. Even with low use, the smokers were 64% more likely to die, 9 times more likely to develop lung cancer, and almost 3 times as likely to have some sort of cardiovascular disease over the 6-year study period. In summary, all cigarette smoking is harmful, but it's never too late to quit. The health benefits of stopping smoking occur the day you stop. Within 3 months, your lung function increases by up to 30%. Within 1 year, your chance of a heart attack is cut in half. New program fast-tracks breast cancer treatment. Women who've been diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer have a new option that significantly speeds up typical treatment times. The new treatment program, which was developed by doctors at Mayo Clinic, combines tumor removal surgery with immediate assessment of the tumor spread. If the tumor is not spread to local lymph nodes, placement of a brachytherapy catheter can be done during the initial operation. With brachytherapy, radiation treatments are precisely delivered to the area where the cancer was removed, the area at higher risk of reoccurrence, using a catheter and temporary radioactive seeds. Brachytherapy limits the amount of radiation that can reach normal breast tissue, the lungs, chest wall, ribs, pectoral muscles, and, for people with left-sided cancer, the heart. While both surgery and radiation therapy are commonplace in early breast cancer treatment, the new treatment development has to do with the timing. Generally, women who have had a lumpectomy wait for a second surgery to receive the brachytherapy catheter. The delay after a lumpectomy is to await confirmation that the cancer hasn't spread. This pathology confirmation, made by examining removed tissues under a microscope, is normally performed in the days following surgery. With this new program, real-time frozen tissue pathology during the surgery confirms whether the tumor has been completely removed. Once a safe margin of tissue is removed and the all-clear is given that no spread is seen, the surgeon implants brachytherapy catheter and a radiation regimen begins soon after, generally the second day after surgery. Compared with more commonly used external beam radiation, which involves 5 days of treatment each week for 3 to 6 weeks, brachytherapy is completed in 5 days or fewer. Mayo Clinic experts say they hope the new option encourages more women to receive post-surgery radiation, particularly if they live far from treatment center or have concerns about the effects of less targeted radiation options on other parts of their body. Advanced cancer therapy checkpoint inhibitors. The immune system is capable of destroying cancer cells, just as it can attack and destroy infectious organisms and other invaders. However, cancer cells have complicated ways to disguise themselves, thus disabling activated immune cells and escaping immune system attack and destruction. There has been a significant increase in research into the intricate interactions between the immune system and cancer cells. This has led to the ongoing development of therapy that uses the immune system in various ways to recognize cancer cells as the harmful actors they are. One of the more promising and intense areas of research and development is with drugs called immune checkpoint inhibitors. These drugs seek to expose invasive cancer cells to an assault by the immune system. Although the drugs can be very effective for some people with advanced cancers, not everyone responds to them. Side effects can be a limiting factor in ongoing therapy. No free pass. Your immune system functions in a complex way that balances the need to identify and eradicate harmful microscopic elements while avoiding an uncontrolled immune response that could harm healthy cells. Specific immune cells called T cells scavenge throughout the body with proteins or antibodies on their surface, communicating with other immune system cells throughout the body to become activated. Once a T cell becomes activated, it can recognize a molecule as foreign or an antigen and mount an immune response to destroy it. However, as part of the immune system's checks and balances, there are also checkpoints on cell surfaces that connect and communicate with T cells to effectively shut down the immune response. Checkpoints are a safety valve for the body to prevent healthy cells from being improperly identified as foes and prevent their destruction. Cancer cells also have antigens on their surfaces. However, cancer cells also possess the same checkpoints that can deactivate T cells at the site of the tumor, thus rendering the T cells ineffective and allowing the cancer to evade destruction by the immune system. Immune checkpoint inhibitors block specific checkpoints that turn off the T cell activation and its attack. Immune checkpoint inhibitors used to treat cancer include the CTLA-4 checkpoint inhibitor, which is called ipilimumab, or Yervoy, Yervoy. CTLA-4 turns off the T cell response in the first phases of antigen recognition. By blocking CTLA-4, this effectively takes the brakes off the immune system so it can build an army of T cells to go after cancer cells. It's Food and Drug Administration approved for use with melanoma and is being studied for use with other cancers as well. PD-1 and PD-L1 checkpoints. These immune checkpoints operate later in the immune response, and by blocking them, this stops the cancer cells from disguising themselves from T cells, and thus leads to their destruction. Drugs in this category include the anti-PD-1 inhibitors Keytruda and Opdivo. PD-L1 inhibitors include Tecentriq, Bavencio, and Imfinzil. These drugs are used in advanced cancers such as melanoma, non-small cell lung cancer, kidney cancer, bladder cancer, head and neck cancer, stomach gastric cancers, and Hodgkin lymphoma. They're also being studied for use with a number of other types of cancer. There are many other immune checkpoint inhibitor drugs in earlier stages of development, some of which fall under the categories discussed earlier and others that target different checkpoints. Another area of study is combining one or more checkpoint inhibitors, or even combining immune checkpoint inhibitors with traditional chemotherapy, radiation, or other forms of immunotherapy to improve response to therapy. Side effects. One downside of checkpoint inhibitor therapy is that normal cells also may be attacked by the activated and increased number of T cells. This can lead to a variety of side effects ranging from mild to quite serious or even life-threatening. Among the more common side effects are skin problems such as rashes and itching, gastrointestinal issues such as diarrhea and inflammation in the intestines or colitis, problems with the thyroid or pituitary gland, and signs of liver toxicity. Less commonly, side effects may affect your nerves, lungs, kidneys, pancreas, heart, or eyes. Patient education, side effect monitoring, and access to a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week on-call staff are important aspects of immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy. In general, treatment is based on side effect severity. Milder side effects can often be managed with symptom treatment while therapy continues. For moderate side effects, therapy may be temporarily withheld, and corticosteroids may be used to calm the immune system. With severe or life-threatening side effects, it's likely the therapy will be discontinued and replaced with corticosteroids. It's often weeks or months before a side effect emerges. Prompt management and treatment of side effects may allow you to continue the therapy. Waiting or delaying side effect treatment may lead to more serious consequences and discontinuation of a cancer therapy. That's why it's vitally important that you discuss these side effects with your doctor, even if you think they are mild. Can taking more than recommended amount of daily vitamins be bad for my health? Answer. Although getting lots of vitamins may seem like a healthy idea, it turns out it's possible to have too much of a good thing. Your body needs vitamins in relatively small amounts. In general, the best way to get those vitamins is through food. But if you choose to take supplemental vitamins, stay reasonably close to the recommended allowance, the recommended dietary allowance, or the RDA, unless told otherwise by your doctor. The RDA is the average daily level of intake that's sufficient to meet the nutritional needs of most healthy people. Avoid taking too much of any individual vitamin, especially the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. With vitamins that are fat-soluble, your body stores excess amounts primarily in the liver. Here's a look at some of the risks. Vitamin A. Too much can cause dizziness, nausea, headaches, coma, and even death. Some studies have also linked high intakes of vitamin A to reduced bone mineral density and increased fracture risk. Vitamin D. Excess vitamin D can cause heart arrhythmias and kidney stones. It can also raise blood levels of calcium, leading to damage to the heart, blood vessels, and kidneys. Vitamin E. High doses of vitamin E supplements can cause hemorrhage, including hemorrhagic stroke. Early research also suggests that high levels of the vitamin may also increase the risk of prostate cancer. Before you take any supplements, talk to your doctor or dietitian. There may be ways to modify your diet to get the vitamins you need without taking a supplement. But if a supplement is necessary for good health, choose supplements that don't exceed your doctor or dietitian's recommendations. Next time, we're going to talk about carotid artery disease. We've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Stay healthy.